I'm Chris Simpson. I got my PhD in astrophysics from the University of Oxford in 1994, and I've been pursuing a career in multi-wavelength astronomy of active galaxies and radio galaxies in particular. I currently work in the Science User Support Department at Gemini Observatory, where I've been helping to write Gemini's new data reduction software package, DRAGONS.
What does the full acronym of DRAGONS stand for?
DRAGONS is Data Reduction for Astronomy from Gemini Observatory North and South.
Awesome. So when most astronomers hear data reduction, they probably think of IRAF, which has been around nearly forever. So could you explain the landscape in which the Image Reduction and Analysis Facility, also known as IRAF, came to be and why there's been such a need for Gemini to make its own reduction pipeline?
Sure. So, I mean, I used IRAF during my PhD in the early 90s, and even then it had been around for a number of years. I think the first release was in 1984, and computing was very different then. You go around any astronomy department these days, and everyone's got a laptop or a desktop with something like 16 gig of memory and a terabyte hard disk and all this wonderful stuff. Whereas back in the late 80s, you know, the sort of home computers that people had, you maybe had 16 kilobytes of memory and floppy disks that held a megabyte. And the computers that academic institutions had were very, very different. You would have one central mainframe that would do all the computing, and people would access it remotely via terminals. And that mainframe would be looked after by the system administrator. And if you wanted to install software that you needed, you'd have to speak to them, and they would have to see if there was enough disk space and so on. Whereas now, of course, you can just download stuff, software off the internet to do what you want to do. So, you know, you might locally have a small amount of storage, but basically everything was done across the network. And IRAF was designed in that environment to try and be efficient in dealing with systems where we don't have the huge amounts of memory and disk space that we do now. And of course that worked because the sort of instruments that existed at major astronomical observatories in the 80s and 90s were much simpler than the multi-million dollar instruments we have these days at Gemini and elsewhere. So, you know, IRAF was fantastically successful, right? The fact it's still being used 35, 36 years after it was written is testament to that. Nothing in computers ever lasts that long. But it had some pretty basic limitations. One of my colleagues once said that, you know, nothing is difficult in IRAF. It's either easy or it's pretty much impossible. There's no middle ground. So if you've used IRAF and you've tried to do something that IRAF doesn't do easily, you have to write your own kind of code in either IRAF's native language called SPP, which is unique to IRAF, or using its CL scripting language, which is kind of clunky and limited and not very efficient. So neither of those options is great. And it doesn't produce code that's easy to write or to maintain. And so this is kind of the problem that happened, you know, towards the sort of turn of the century and in the last few years, is basically what IRAF was designed for and the instruments it was designed for were much simpler than the kind of instruments that modern day observatories have. So there was a major upgrade to support the instruments on the Hubble Space Telescope that allowed increased functionality that allowed us at Gemini, before my time here, to write code in IRAF that built on that to reduce the first suite of instruments at Gemini. But as we've had newer instruments, more complicated instruments, the limitations are becoming apparent. And at other observatories as well, they're getting their own instruments and pipelines are being written in other languages. They're often unique, bespoke, standalone pipelines written often in a language like C or C++ that has its own way of accessing the data and doesn't need IRAF at all. So fewer people are using IRAF. It's therefore not having the resources to maintain and support it. And the result of this is basically that, you know, it's dying. And one of the more recent issues that's come up is a lot of the essential stuff in IRAF isn't written in a 32-bit architecture. And the most recent macOS update, Catalina, that came out last year, doesn't have any support for that. So we've had to put out on the website, say, if you have a Mac, don't upgrade to Catalina or you won't be able to use IRAF without some sort of virtual machine installation. Or it's kind of, the clock is ticking quite quickly and we need something new to reduce data from existing Gemini instruments and the future instruments that are going to come along. That's where DRAGONS comes in.
So what does DRAGONS do and how does it differ itself from IRAF?
Right, so DRAGONS, as the name says, it's data reduction, whereas IRAF was image reduction and analysis facility. So DRAGONS is focused on the first part of that. So basically taking your raw data that has all the instrumental signatures in and getting it to look nice and pretty in a way that you can do the analysis. Now, we're not focused on the analysis. There's lots of software out there that's been out there for many years to do analysis. And there's new software being written by a number of groups, particularly the AstroPi Consortium, who recently won the Royal Astronomical Society's Group Award for the work that they've been doing, that allows you to analyze your reduced data. But having said that, you know, Dragons is written in Python, which is a popular language, a very powerful one these days. And in that sense, parts of it can be incorporated into other software that you might want to write. And what we're trying to do in Dragons is write tasks similar to the tasks in IRAF to do quite standard generic stuff that data needs. So bias subtraction and flat fielding and those sorts of things, if listeners are familiar with data reduction steps. One of the things about observations is that when you take data with an instrument, it has a lot of instrument-specific signatures in it that you need to remove. So, for instance, you read out a CCD, and that's all converted via an analog-to-digital converter that has a variable bias voltage. And so one of the steps you need to do is remove that bias voltage, and you do that by taking specific bias frames. In addition, if you take an image, each little pixel in the silicon has a very slightly different sensitivity to light. And so you need to normalize that out so that the brightness you measure for your object doesn't depend on exactly where on the instrument you're imaging it. So the observation that's done there is a flat field where you take an image of the twilight sky normally, which has very uniform brightness, and that tells you the relative pixel-to-pixel response of your detector that you can then use to divide into your image to remove that instrumental signature. And so in order to go from the raw data that were taken to the final reduced data that's suitable to measure your, you know, the scientific results that you want, you have to do all these various steps, remove the bias, flat field the data. For some instruments, you have to remove the dark current and so on. And so what data reduction involves is basically taking all those frames and combining them in a sensible way in order to come out with one final image, right? A reduction from maybe 20 or 100 input images down to one. And so what Dragons does is it understands about the different types of data that are needed. And when it looks at files, it says, oh, this is a science image, this is a flat field, this is a bias. And it, by virtue of the various recipes that are provided with it, it knows how to combine all those images in a way to get down to your final reduced data product. But also ways to tie those together to make it easy for people who have Gemini data to reduce their data in quite a straightforward kind of push a button and then go and make coffee and come back and it's done. Because as an astronomer, you don't want to spend a lot of time reducing your data. You want to analyze it and come up with the next big idea that will ultimately win you a Nobel Prize. So it's supposed to be much more user-friendly than IRAF if you're a user who just wants to get their data reduced, but flexible enough that if you want to do something more involved, you can. So one of the key things that enables Dragons to do that, and that is possible to do in an object-oriented language like Python, is the data files basically announce who they are to Dragons. So when Dragons opens a file, it reads the file and compares it to a list of data file types it has and can say, oh, this is an image from NIRI, or this is a spectrum from GMOS. And then subsequently, the file gets wrapped in this Python object that provides a uniform interface for Dragons to get all the information it needs to reduce it. Whereas if people have used IRAF, they know they have to specify the name of the keyword for the exposure time or the pixel scale or type into one of the parameters. The pixel scale of the instrument is 0.1 arc seconds or whatever. Parts of Dragons do this in an automatic way. So if you want to use Dragons to reduce data, there's a uniform way to get hold of the pixel scale or the exposure time or the filter in a way that doesn't need user interaction. And that makes it much easier for people to reduce their data and write scripts to reduce data. And so we have recipes, which are basically linked lists of tasks to reduce data. And for different instruments, they're very similar because the steps might be similar. the way that they're coded and the information that they need might come in slightly different ways, but that's all transparent to dragons. So the idea is that basically you can use these tasks and put them together in a much simpler way than you can in IRAF in order to reduce your data.
And as of October 2019, version 2.1 has come out. So with this current release to the public, what Gemini facilities instruments are supported so far?
So our first public release, they say came out at the end of October, supports the facility imagers at Gemini, so which means instruments that Gemini owns and has to support, and their imaging modes. So we have GMOS, both in the north and south, which is our optical imager that does a large fraction of the observations here at Gemini. And then we have some infrared imagers. We have the near-infrared imager NIRI in the north, the Gemini South adaptive optics imager, GSAOI. We have Flamingos 2, which is another infrared imager in the south. And then we also support, to a somewhat limited extent, GNIRS, which is primarily an infrared spectrograph here in the north, but also has an imaging mode with a very limited field of view. So it's used a small amount, but we do give that some support. And Dragons will reduce all those data from raw data to finished data pretty much just by pressing a button and go and leaving it alone and it will go. The one slight exception there, GSAOI, the final data product that Dragons produces is not the final product. If you want to stack images, there's an additional package called Disco Stew, which deals with the distortion inherent in GSAOI because of the adaptive optics module. And our plan is to integrate that fully into Dragons, but because of the way that these two things were developed, it runs separately, but uses a lot of the same features that Dragons does.
So from an observer's perspective, somebody using the Gemini instruments, what would be a typical timeline for them before Dragons came out versus now that it's been released, how they would go about reducing their data?
So the first stuff is still the same. You still go to the archive and you still download your data and you still get your calibrations. But, you know, we've had people who've used Dragons who previously, for instance, reducing data with Flamingos 2, it would take a couple of weeks to get, or even longer, to get good quality data out. They would have to worry about, you know, reducing their calibrations and do all the bookkeeping themselves and say, okay, I've produced this flat field. This flat field is needed for these science frames. Another thing that Dragons does is it keeps track of the calibrations for you. If you reduce a calibration to produce a dark or a flat field, you tell the calibration manager about it, and then whenever Dragons needs a calibration, it will look and see if it's already got one and will just provide it. You don't have to worry about the name of the file or where on disk it was. That's all sorted in much the same way that when you go to the archive and press load associated calibrations, you get a list of the calibrations that are needed, but those are raw calibrations, and Dragons, you have the calibrations that you've processed there. So people have reduced Dragons data from downloading the raw data from the archive to finished products in a couple of hours rather than a couple of weeks. Now, obviously, that relies on everything working fine. There's still the need for the, once you download your data, to kind of look at it and check that it's okay. Dragons won't do the sanity checks for you and make sure that, you know, cloud didn't roll in the middle of it or whatever, and maybe you don't want to use these frames. But once it's got a nice set of data to reduce, it's simply a matter of telling Dragons to go, maybe writing a little script to do them the different reduction steps, you know, produce the dark, produce the flat field, then do the science. But it's much more straightforward than it ever was in RF.
And what level of quality are these reduced images output at?
So that depends on how much effort the user puts in. So as I say, in principle, you can just throw the data at Dragons. It will open it and say, oh, this is a GMOS image, so I'm going to use a standard GMOS reduction recipe, and you'll get a reduced GMOS image out. Now, if everything was fine, that might be science quality. That might be all you have to do, and now you're ready to go and measure stuff. On the other hand, if things happened, you might need to play around a little bit more. So if the seeing varied dramatically, then you as an astronomer might go, actually, I only want to combine these of the images, not these ones, because the seeing was bad or cloud came through or something else. And so those decisions are still obviously up to the astronomer. In addition, there may be one or two things. It may be if you had other types of variable conditions, you may need to just tweak some of the default parameters a little bit in order to get slightly better data. So the default is what we term here quick look or near science quality is a phrase that we have, which is it's probably good enough to decide what, you know, to produce something and just determine whether you're likely to get the scientific results you wanted, but you know, it doesn't come with any guarantees. Ultimately, it's still on the point of the astronomer to make sure that the data that went in were sensible, and there's still probably a possibility of just getting slightly better results out of it just by changing some of the parameters, in the same way that IRAF has lots of parameters you can change in terms of how things are done. But all the steps are pretty automatic. You know, aligning images based on the objects in them is automatic and seems to work very well. Now, maybe if for certain fields that might struggle and you need to just give it a bit of a helping hand and a push in the right direction. So those are the things that, you know, you still have to check, you know, based on what you've got out makes sense.
But Dragons isn't fully automated. You could go back and maybe change a master flat and input that, but tell it you prefer that as the preference?
That's absolutely. So although there's a calibration manager that will go and get a flat for you, you can always override that. And so when aligning images, it will try and do it based on the objects. You can kind of override that. Ultimately, if the person reducing the data wants to do something, Dragons won't stop them. Right? That's one of the requirements, because ultimately it's up to the person reducing the data what they want to do. So although if you want a flat field, something normally Dragons will check that the thing you're flat fielding is a flat field and is identified as that by the header. If you want to specify a different file, it won't say, this isn't a flat. The assumption is if you've said you want to use that file, then you know what you're doing and Dragons won't scream at you or breathe fire.
Okay. And could you describe the pros and benefits of using AstroConda from an observer's point of view? So AstroConda being one of the things you need for this process.
So one of the big, as I say, one of the big differences between what computing was like when IRAF came out and what it is now is basically that everyone can install all the software they need locally. And so Anaconda and AstroConda are ways to coherently make sure that you have a set of Python packages on your computer that all have the right versions and the right dependencies and can all work together. So Dragons is part of that. If you try and install Dragons via AstroConda, it will check that the packages that it depends on, things like NumPy, SciPy, and some of the AstroPy packages, all have the right versions. And if not, it will update them and make sure that everything is sensible. So you don't have to, again, you don't have to do all that housekeeping or ask anyone else to do it for you. You can just install Dragons via AstroConda, and it makes sure that you have everything you need for it to work, all the dependencies.
So one of the things that you mentioned in the beginning of the interview was that this doesn't do the analysis side of the pipeline, so like photometry or things like that. So what typical softwares or programs would an observer use in order to finish the analysis side of things?
Photometry, a lot of people do things in IRAF, but many people use other packages, DAO, FOAT, Source Extractor, or the AstroPy FOTUtils packages that does photometry. I mean, ultimately, it's things like photometry are measuring the values of a number of pixels. They're a fairly standard thing. And so other people, you know, they're not inherently astronomical at some level, if you see what I mean. So in a lot of cases, there's software already out there that people have been using for a number of years and can continue to use, because Dragons writes out reduced files in the standard FITS format that's recognized by all these packages. So it's easy to take a product from Dragons and then feed it into whatever subsequent analysis packages you like. Or in some cases, you know, write your own. You can write things in Python that use parts of Dragons or don't, to open the files and do the analysis yourself if you want to do something that's very unique to your own project.
Okay, so in order to tie Dragons into GEMMA and multi-messenger astronomy and time domain astronomy, in the future, the Vera Rubin Observatory is going to be detecting about 10 to the 7th power transient objects per night, or just at least giving those alerts out.
Yeah.
So there's gonna be a lot of data, a lot of objects. So how does the development of Dragons improve Gemini's standing in the realm of time domain astronomy?
So we've had some funding as part of the Gemma project in order to develop basically a quick look pipeline for observations that are done in target of opportunity mode. So basically based on alerts either from the Rubin Observatory or from other observatories. Gemini already does time domain type astronomy where if gamma ray burst, for instance, or gravitational wave alerts come off, it will do follow-up observations. But currently, Gemini doesn't provide anything more than the raw data that has to be reduced. What we are trying to do is produce this quick look mode of data reduction, so basically a hands-off automated reduction of data that's the best that can be done without any user interaction, and make that available on the archive for principal investigators to look at basically as soon as their observations finish. So initially the plan is in spring of next year, 2021, we will be providing that for target of opportunity observations. This is obviously before the Rubin Observatory starts observing, but that will use either any of the imaging instruments that Dragons already supports or long slit spectroscopic observations with GMOS. So one of the things we're working on now is the reduction of GMOS long slit observations in Dragons, and that's coming along quite nicely. The other thing is then to have a real-time quick look reduction pipeline that will recognize when it's appropriate to reduce the data that comes in. You don't want to just say, oh, I've got one bias frame, let's reduce that. While it's busy reducing that, the interesting stuff happens. So it knows what the telescope's doing, when it should reduce some data, it reduces it, and then uploads the reduced product to the archive, which the principal investigator will be able to look at, and hopefully will be good enough quality. It won't be perfect science quality because no one's really looked at it in detail, but it should be good enough quality for the PI to decide whether, you know, the object that they've observed is sufficiently interesting, whether they've got the data they want and they can stop, or they want to do something else, or start following it up in some other way. Now, sometimes this might be difficult. You can imagine if an alert goes off, a PI might want to basically take photometry of it in a fairly regular way to measure its light curve and see maybe how it's decaying and getting fainter. Now, Dragons won't know exactly how to combine those, right? It takes a lot of images of the same place in one filter. How does it know how many to combine? It can keep combining them, but you don't have that separation in time unless the PI puts that in and says, okay, here, I want you to reduce these few images first, then these few. So, and even then, because nobody can predict exactly what's going to happen, that might not be right. So we can't guarantee that what we're going to produce is exactly what the principal investigator wants, but we can do our best effort basis. And so both the raw data and our quick look products will be available in the archive, including previews of them. So the user can download them, take a look, analyze them quickly, and then decide how to proceed from there. And in the case of long observations, we won't just wait till the end to produce something. There'll be a, you know, part of the intelligence of the reduction is to say, okay, you've already integrated for half an hour on this, say. That's probably enough that you might have something, even though you're going to go for another half hour. We can provide something for you now. So these are the kind of decisions and the sort of intelligence we have to build into the system to make these decisions. And, you know, we may not get it entirely right the first time, but the idea is that we will, with existing TOO programs, we will be able to make this mode available and see, you know, develop it to a stage where once a Rubin Observatory comes along and there are, you know, ridiculous numbers of alerts coming in, that it will work as well as we, you know, we can make it in that case.
So you just mentioned TOOs, which are target of opportunities. There's also RTOOs, rapid targets of opportunities. So in the realm of time domain astronomy, a lot of these things, you sometimes don't get a second chance to view them. It's something that it's now or never, and these PIs need to make decisions in the moment. So are there actual networks that are going to be in place now that multi-messenger astronomy and time domain astronomy is building or connecting all these facilities around the world?
So, yeah, so the idea is obviously for, you know, if you have something really bright that goes off on the sky that's, you know, let's say naked eye brightness, you don't really need the Gemini Observatory with its 8-meter telescope to follow it up. You can use a smaller observatory. And so there's this desire to have networks where effectively PIs can feed in their proposals to a network, and the network will decide based on the information it gets from. So the Rubin Observatory will say, well, we'll put out alerts. They will be read, I was going to say intercepted, but it's not, you know, they're not stolen. But an alert comes out. It's seen by one of these networks. So a network that Gemini is involved in is EON, which is the Astronomical Event Observatory Network. And that, there are other observatories in there. So there is SOAR, which is a 4-meter telescope in Chile, and also Las Cumbres Observatory, which is a network of smaller telescopes around the globe. And EON will decide based on the information about this event, so how bright it is, which telescope is best suited to observe it. You know, if you want spectroscopy, for instance, maybe only certain telescopes have that instrument available now. It might be off being repaired or refurbished somewhere else. So Gemini is kind of bought into that. Exactly how much time is available for this is a management level decision that I'm not involved in. It's above my pay grade. But ultimately, there will be ways for PIs to apply for time as part of this network, defining what sort of events they're interested in and what they want to do subsequently according to that. So, you know, if they want to take spectra, they might say, okay, if the object's this bright, you can use this telescope. If it's fainter, you can use this telescope. And then that alert will be sent to Gemini. And depending on whether, you know, what state Gemini is in, it may be that there are only certain nights that Gemini will be following this up. Of course, it may be conditions are just too bad on the mountain. It may be cloudy, it can't do anything. Or it may be, okay, this is important and Gemini will stop what it's doing immediately. Or it may want to finish the observation that's going on. I guess this will be reported back to EON. So EON will say, Gemini, can you observe this? And Gemini will say, no. And so EON will try something else. This is the kind of system that in an ideal world will work. And that's what astronomers are developing towards. So that you don't have to basically apply, put the same proposal into every single telescope that exists in the hope of getting, you know, being successful in one. And that's kind of the way astronomy should work. It's a cooperative endeavor, right? Although there are, you know, teams want to compete to do the first thing, we're all trying to get knowledge together. And ultimately, you know, if Gemini misses out and Keck, say, or ESO makes the observations, well, that's a shame, but, you know, there'll be other observations Gemini can do. And the important thing is that somebody observed it, because as you say, these things might go off once in a, you know, it might be a unique observation, and it may happen once in a, you know, once in 100 years or, you know, even longer than that.
So if I was an observer, perhaps here at the observatory or a visiting astronomer, and I have been resisting that Mac update. I've been trying to stay with my IRAF ways, but I've listened to this episode. I bought into Dragons. What kind of web pages and programs should I keep in mind or look for if I want to start this process?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily, you know, do that Mac upgrade yet. Although I should say we are, at Gemini, we are, you know, aware that at some point, you know, Apple will pull support for earlier versions of macOS. So we are trying to work out the most efficient way that you can run effectively an older version of macOS as a virtual machine and for free. There are ways to do this using software that you have to pay for, but we want to set up a system effectively, even after you've upgraded to Catalina, there'll be a download and installation that will allow you to run an earlier version of macOS on your computer and therefore run IRAF. If, however, you expect your data to come from some of the facility images that we've described, then you want to, in the first instance, go to the Gemini data reduction page on the Gemini website, and that has links to other pages, including tutorials for each of the instruments that Dragons currently supports, where it describes a data set you can download from the archive and how to reduce it and explains the steps that Dragons is doing. And so that's the place to go in the first instance. The Dragons code is all open source. It's all on GitHub. And so if you fancy yourself as a Python programmer and you think you can help us, or you think there are things that Dragons does that aren't very good and can be better, you can interact by either raising issues or even submitting your own pull requests in a standard GitHub kind of way, and we will look at them. We're keen to, you know, avoid a duplication of effort. So if you want to do something significant and write software to reduce data from your own facility, perhaps, you know, you're at a university with its own telescope, and you're thinking, oh, Dragons would be good for that because we're currently using RF and that's going to be a problem, then by all means, get in touch with the Science User Support Department at susinquiries@gemini.edu, and we'll see if we can provide any support. There is also the Gemini Data Reduction Forum, which has a topic there for feedback and comments about Dragons. If you're not, you know, if GitHub's not really quite the level you're at and you just want to say, great with Dragons, or Dragons hasn't worked, or whatever, you can leave something there, and the standard Gemini help desk, if you have any issues, are ways to interact with us, and we'll help you as much as we can. Currently, the feedback we've got from the community on Dragons has all been positive. People have found it much easier to use than IRAF, and we've had people who've reduced data and are busy writing papers with it already. So we're happy with what we've done, but of course, you know, there's a long way to go for many of the other instruments that Gemini has and the new instruments that are coming.
And so what is that feature timeline? Just next year or two?
So as I say, what we're working on now is long slit for GMOS. The quick look, which will run internally, will hopefully come out spring next year. The science quality version. So the big difference between quick look and the science quality is that science quality has, particularly for spectroscopy, there's a lot of interactivity that the user will want to make sure that things are working. And so anyone who's used IRAF knows it has a lot of good interactive tools and visualization. And so we have to install those sorts of tools within our reduction. So the plan to have the science quality release for Dragons, the next version that supports GMOS long slit, is probably not until 2022. And then following from that, we will probably support long slit mode for the other instruments like Flamingos 2, and then subsequently other modes of GMOS. That is a decision that is yet to be made, but there's a number of years still before Dragons will support everything that we have. New instruments coming online, so GHOST is the next facility instrument for Gemini that will appear in the South later this year, and the GHOST team are writing their reduction using Dragons, and so the hope is that the science quality reduction for GHOST will possibly come out fairly, you know, maybe on that sort of time scale towards, you know, sometime next year. I'm not sure we can't really know until it starts taking data and we see what happens. And then subsequent instruments as and when they come. But yeah, Scorpio, I think, is the instrument after that. And again, the data reduction pipeline for Scorpio is being written by the Scorpio team using Dragons.
Okay. Well, quite a few lengthy conversations led up to this episode in itself. And I spent quite a few months struggling with my undergrad project doing data reduction with IRAF and just wrestling with that. So I applaud your efforts on making the data reduction process simpler. And thanks for joining me for this conversation.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.